Buddy, for being here and joining us on this beautiful, beautiful Sunday afternoon or Sunday morning again. Welcome to Lion's Roar Dharma Center. If this is your first time here, we're very excited to see new people all the time and to be able to share the Dharma with you and also part of your Sunday morning. We're going to start today by doing some prayers out of our prayer book. Hopefully everybody has one here, Peter prayers, and we're going to follow along with him. After we do prayers, then we will probably have a short Dharma talk, followed by a meditation, and then we'll probably have a break for just a few minutes to get up and stretch, and then we'll come back for some discussion and some questions and some dialogue. So that's the agenda for this morning. We'll go ahead and get started with some opening prayers here.
Well, good morning. My name is Peter. I just wanted to take a minute again just to kind of bring everybody back to their body. I know all the bodies are here, but sometimes we spend a little time in our heads in other places, perhaps. So just try to find yourself in a space where you can straighten your spine, relax your lower body, maybe see if you can get your knees a little bit below your hips. Sometimes you have to scoot up a little bit. And then just take some deep breaths and try to breathe into your belly. It's like babies breathe. So about three deep breaths, nice relaxing breaths, and then find the prayer book. And we'll begin on page 3 of Praise to Shakyamuni Buddha. Teacher, foe destroyer, thus gone, fully and perfectly awakened Buddha, endowed with knowledge and good conduct, gone to bliss, knower of the world, helmsman of ordinary beings to be tamed, supreme one, teacher of all gods and men, Buddha, foe destroyer, glorious victorious one, Shakyamuni, to you I pay homage, make offerings and go for refuge. Teacher, foe destroyer, thus gone, fully and perfectly awakened Buddha, endowed with knowledge and good conduct, gone to bliss, knower of the world, helmsman of ordinary beings to be tamed, supreme one, teacher of all gods and men, Buddha, foe destroyer, glorious victorious one, Shakyamuni, to you I pay homage, make offerings and go for refuge. Teacher, foe destroyer, thus gone, fully and perfectly awakened Buddha, endowed with knowledge and good conduct, gone to bliss, knower of the world, helmsman of ordinary beings to be tamed, supreme one, teacher of all gods and men, Buddha, foe destroyer, glorious victorious one, Shakyamuni, to you I pay homage, make offerings, and go for refuge. When you, chief of humans, were born, you took 7 steps on this great earth, and you said, I am supreme in this world. To you who were wise at that time, I prostrate. Completely pure body, supremely fine form, ocean of wisdom like a golden mountain, fame that blazes in the 3 worlds, supreme protector, to you I prostrate. Endowed with the supreme marks, a face like the stainless moon, a color like gold, to you I pay homage. The three worlds are not like you, who is free from dust. Masterless one, endowed with knowledge, to you I prostrate. Protector endowed with great compassion, omniscient teacher, feel devotion like merits and good qualities, to the thus gone I prostrate. From through purity, free from attachment, through virtue, releases from the evil-gone realms, unique, supreme, ultimate meaning, to the Dharma that brings peace, I prostrate. From freedom, teaching the path, well abiding in the pure trainings, holy field endowed with good qualities, to the Sangha also I prostrate. Homage to the Supreme Buddha, homage to the Dharma refuge, homage to the great Sangha, to all 3 ever-devout homage, to all worthy of respect, bowing with bodies as many as all realms, atoms, and all aspects, with supreme faith I pay homage. Do not commit any non-virtuous action, accumulate virtue and goodness, subdue your own mind. This is the teaching of the Buddha. Like a star, a mirage, a lamp, illusions, drops of dew, bubbles, dreams, lightning, and clouds, look at all conditioned phenomena as such. Due to this merit, having attained the state of the all-seeing and thereby subduing the enemy of faults, may I liberate migrators from the ocean of existence, stirred by the waves of aging, sickness, and death.
I take refuge in the Guru. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in the Guru. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in the Guru. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge until I am enlightened in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. By the positive potential I create by listening to the Dharma, may I attain Buddhahood in order to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the joyful happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from holding some close and others distant.
Respectfully, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I confess all my negative actions accumulated since beginningless time, and rejoice in the virtuous actions of all ordinary and noble beings. Please, Buddha, remain as our guide, and turn the wheel of Dharma until samsara ends. Through the merit created by myself and others, may the two bodhicittas ripen, and may I attain Buddhahood for the sake of all sentient beings.
This offering I make of a precious jeweled mandala,
together with other pure offerings and wealth, and the virtues we have collected throughout the three times with our body, speech, and mind. O my masters, my yidams, and the three precious jewels, I offer all to you with unwavering faith. Accepting these out of your boundless compassion, please send forth waves of your blessing. Idam Guru Ratna Mandalakam Nirtiyami.
Prajna Paramita, the Heart of Perfection of Wisdom Sutra. I prostrate
to the Arya Triple Gem.
Thus did I hear at one time, the Bhagavan was dwelling on the mass of Vultures Mountain on Rajagriha, together with a great community of monks and a great community of bodhisattvas. At that time, the Bhagavan was absorbed in the concentration on the categories of phenomena called profound perception. Also at that time, the bodhisattva, mahasattva, Arya, Avalokiteshvara, looked upon the very practice of the profound perfection of wisdom and beheld those five aggregates also as empty of inherent nature. Then, through the power of the Buddha, the venerable Shariputra said this to the bodhisattva, mahasattva, Arya, Avalokiteshvara, how should any son of the lineage train who wishes to practice the activity of the profound perfection of wisdom? He said that, and the bodhisattva, mahasattva, Arya, Avalokiteshvara, said this to the venerable Shariputra. Shariputra, any son of the lineage or daughter of the lineage who wishes to practice the activity of the profound perfection of wisdom should look upon it like this, correctly and repeatedly beholding those five aggregates also as empty of inherent nature. Form is empty, emptiness is form, emptiness is not other than form, form is also not other than emptiness. In the same way, feeling, discrimination, compositional factors, and consciousness are empty. Shariputra, likewise, all phenomena are emptiness, without characteristic, unproduced, unceased, stainless, not without stain, not deficient, not fulfilled. Shariputra, therefore, in emptiness there is no form, no feeling, no discrimination, no compositional factors, no consciousness, no eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, no visual form, no sound, no odor, no taste, no object of touch, and no phenomena. There is no I element, and so on, and up to and including no mind element, and no mental consciousness element. There is no ignorance, no extinction of ignorance, and so on, and up to and including no aging and death, and no extinction of aging and death. Similarly, there is no suffering, origination, cessation, and path. There is no exalted wisdom, no attainment, and also no non-attainment. Shariputra, therefore, because there is no attainment, bodhisattvas rely on and dwell in the perfection of wisdom, the mind without obscuration and without fear. Having completely passed beyond error, they reach the end point of nirvana. All the Buddhas who dwell in the three times also manifestly, completely awaken to unsurpassable, perfect, complete enlightenment in reliance on the perfection of wisdom. Therefore, the mantra of the perfection of wisdom, the mantra of great knowledge, the unsurpassed mantra, the mantra equal to the unequaled, the mantra that thoroughly pacifies all suffering should be known as the truth, since it is not false. The mantra of the perfection of wisdom is declared
Tadigata, Gate Gate, Paragate, Parasangate, Bodhisattva. Say 21 of the mantras now, and I'll say the last one out loud, and then we'll continue. Gate, 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 paragate, parasamgate, bodhisattva. Shariputra, the bodhisattva, mahasattva,
should train in the profound perfection of wisdom like that.
Then the Bhagavan rose from that concentration and commended the bodhisattva, mahasattva, Arya, Avalokiteshvara, saying, well said, son of the lineage, it is like that,
it is like that.
One should practice the profound perfection of wisdom, just as you have indicated, even the Tathagatas rejoice.
The Bhagavan having thus spoken, the Venerable Shariputra, the Bodhisattva, Mahasattva, Arya, Avalokiteshvara, those surrounding in their entirety, along with the worlds of gods, humans, Asuras, and Gandharvas, were overjoyed and highly praised that spoken by the Bhagavan.
Thank you. Okay, so again, good morning, everybody. Thanks for joining us today. I certainly couldn't be here, and none of us would be here if we didn't have benefactors of the temple, and certainly donations and dana that allow us to keep the door open. So first and foremost, we have a dana box that sits right there in the middle of the temple when you walk in. Certainly anything that you're able to offer into the dana box will be much appreciated for the programs that are here at the temple, and also to help us keep the temple doors open for the community to continue to participate in as well. We have one announcement this morning, I think, before we get started as well, and that's about our book club, which was on the calendar for today at 1 o'clock, but it has been rescheduled. Lama is not here today. So it's October 6th now, which is going to be two weekends from today, so not next Sunday, but the following Sunday at 1 o'clock in the community room. They'll be doing the book club again, and they're on their second book now, and third or fourth or fifth. Okay, I lost track. See, my fault there. Which book is it that's... Okay, interesting. So that will happen on October 6th at 1 o'clock. So that after today, we'll be closing this afternoon. So taking some more breaths and
Last time I had to give a Dharma talk, I had Lama here with me, sitting right behind me. So that makes it a little bit more intimidating. But now that he's not here, I find myself even more nervous. So go figure, because that's not what I was expecting to happen. Usually I am, and Lama knows that, I love to share the Dharma and I love to talk. So the Dharma is definitely has steeped within me, and I'm certainly excited to share with you my practice and kind of, I guess, our topic that we've selected, that we kind of have it as an ongoing theme for our temple, is the Bodhisattva path. And we call it the Bodhisattva path because everybody has an innate Buddha nature. What and how awakened it is or not, or how liberated and enlightened it is a completely different story for another time and place. But the point is that we all have a Buddha nature within us, and that we're on the path together, whether we want to be or not, right? We all woke up this morning. We all got dressed. We all came here. We all showed up this morning. So we're all kind of on the same page, right? We're all on that universal path, as we would call it. Now, what's interesting is that, you know, we are on, we all have a similar path, but at the same time, we're all on our own unique path, right? Because we have this form that we're in that none of us really look alike, except for the fact that we might have a twin or a doppelganger out in the world, which, believe me, I've seen quite a few, and have even folks at work just a couple months ago. But we're not all the same, right? We all look very, very different, and we all have lots of different types of energies that are within us that we manifest, and that we are able to go on that Bodhisattva path, hopefully in pursuit of happiness, right? As the Dalai Lama says, and as Lama Tsongkhapa says, the whole point and purpose of our Bodhisattva path and getting on that path is to experience happiness and to have a level of happiness that's an innate happiness, right? It's not a happiness that is found by any type of temporal pleasures, as we would say, or any type of experience per se, or person, or thing, or object. Now, for me, that's, you know, counterintuitive to being born in the States and being raised in a different religion, right? That's really a little bit counterintuitive to what you're taught, and even in our school system, to what you're taught. You're taught that, again, you're supposed to go to school, you're supposed to become educated, you're supposed to get a job, you're supposed to get a house and have a car, and all of that's going to make you happy. Oh. And that's panacea, that's nirvana, that's paranirvana. It's not true. That's, you know, in the essence, in the root of the Dharma, in happiness and suffering, is to really prove that that's not true. And we prove that that's not true with some of our philosophies and fundamentals in Buddhism around the Four Noble Truths. And we talk about suffering so that everybody that's on the Bodhisattva path really begins to have an understanding. We said it in the prayer book at least three times, right? Suffering, suffering, suffering. That we want to eliminate it. We want to alleviate it. We want it to go away. Now, that's, again, going to mean very different things for everybody and be a different experience for everybody on how they eliminate that suffering. There's usually four things that come up when we talk about that, and they're also related to kind of the three poisons, which are attachment, aversion, and ignorance. Those three fundamentals alone also are usually root causes of a lot of suffering. And I like to talk about attachment, and maybe we'll talk a little bit about attachment and how it relates to suffering, at least how I understand how it relates to suffering. Because when, again, being on the path, then getting older, you start to accumulate things, right? Just either They've been bequeathed to you. They've been left to you, right? Your friends give it away to you. Your family leaves you things that you want, property, possessions, all of these things, and you start to get things. If you look around the blocks, we have storage lockers like on every block, and we can't open enough mini storages to keep people happy. And they're paying hundreds of dollars a month to their mini storage to keep their stuff in their storage that they haven't seen in 6 years or 12 years or 10 years, right? My point in saying that is that those things are causing suffering. Those things are causing suffering. The more physical things that you have, the more objects that you possess, typically those can cause suffering, right? Because if you have property, right, it needs to be maintained. It has to be taken care of. There's property taxes. There are constant expenditures, right? You're constantly having to put forth. Now, at the same time, we have to have things, right? We have to have things to live. We all have to have a roof over our head. At least we want to have a roof over our head. Hopefully our karma is in a place that we all do have a roof over our head. And by doing that, coming together is finding that middle way there, right? And that's, again, what our practice is about, is finding that middle way. Do we have to have the biggest, best house on the block? No, it's not about that. We need to have a house that's going to provide based on the resources that you have and what you need for your life, right? And does it suit what you have? Or are you finding that you're giving all of your energy away to something outside of yourself and to these things that aren't giving you time to manifest a practice inside and to start to look inside to start finding some of those causes of happiness? Because that's where the happiness is going to come from. One of the other things with suffering, right, with attachment is, and I've talked about this week with other Sangha members and with Lama La, is the kleshas, right? And we talk about suffering and with afflictive emotions that come in our mind as a part of being the human condition. And some of those around attachment can be anger. Some of them can be greed. Some of them can be jealousy, right? These are afflictive emotions that come up, and they come up often. And in our workshop yesterday, we talked about, you know, usually you can let things go really, really easy unless you're angry at somebody. And boy, is that on the forefront of your mind, just burning like a stamp on your head, right? And it's amazing when these emotions are able to come, how much control that they're able to take over and how much control they have over you without you even realizing it, first and foremost. The human condition is very interesting in such is that we're always going to have afflictive emotions in ways that are not always positive to yourself, right? Are not always ways that are going to create happiness for yourself. A lot of negative talk. I'm really bad at it. I'll be my own worst critic all the time, and I think many of us are. And that those again are really afflictive emotions, and can prevent happiness by having those emotions on the path. If we didn't have the opportunity for these emotions to arise whenever they do arise, we also wouldn't have an opportunity to find happiness out of those emotions, because those emotions present opportunities for you to have an experience and to really understand what that emotion is, and to feel that emotion, and to live that emotion, and to know that you've got some other choices to make if you want to continue to be on that path of anger. It's not necessarily going to provide you happiness, right? Some people, it's like a default state or a default mind where you automatically go to. Everybody kind of has a default, I think, and I think a lot of that has to do with our temperament. A lot of it has to do with our individual personalities. There's people here, Kenshin Rinpoche, Geshe Sewag, they were here last weekend for our Medicine Buddha empowerment. If I could be one, like, little head of a needle, as calm, cool, and collected as they are, I'll consider this a blissful state, right, or a blissful life, or that I will have accomplished something. That's not who I am inside, right? And my bodhisattva path is not about that. Lamala and I talk a lot about afflictive emotions because anger, for me, can tend to be one of my go-to default emotions. And I don't know why. It's not, you know, nobody wants to be angry because it's not good for the people that you're angry at, right? And when you're angry, that's one emotion that you really have a hard time not letting other people know about. If somebody's jealous, you don't really see that, right? There's not a lot of things that you can say, oh man, that person's really jealous that person's got on a nice pair of shoes or has a nicer car or whatever. Those are not things that you can see. When anger manifests, you can see that, right? You can see it in temple swelling. You can see it in people's faces getting red. The tone of their voice changes. Their whole body language and demeanor changes. I think that's very interesting because it's one of those things that this practice fundamentally enables on the path is, how am I going to stop that from happening, right? Because you get to that situation or to that experience, you have to make a conscious decision. Am I going to be angry or am I going to be happy, right? And hopefully you have a millisecond or a second or maybe even 3 seconds would be nice sometimes to just say, hey, no, that doesn't feel right. I might be getting angry about that, but that's not how I want to handle it. And I don't want to handle it that way because, first of all, it's not good for me, right? It's not making me any happier by being angry, and it's not a calm, relaxed state of mind. And when we don't have a calm, relaxed state of mind, we don't make good decisions. We know this. We've done a lot of science on that. A lot of things are done in haste, right, or done very quickly when that fire is burning and is fueling. Now, what's the middle way to anger? I ask Lama all the time, right? What is the middle way to anger? There has to be a middle way. And the answer to that, and I sometimes like it, sometimes I don't like it. And the answer to that is anger's there to remove obstacles, right? And it can be done in a way that Manjushri has a sword that he holds in his tanka, and he actually has that sword. And if you imagine that sword, a warm, hot sword cutting through butter, right? It's going to be a real nice, clean cut. That's kind of what the energy of anger is supposed to manifest, and how from a behavior and letting that emotion kind of roll, it's letting people kind of know that you're serious, right? And that something needs to be done. But again, how that emotion is rolling out, it's not to cause suffering to other people, right? It's to move obstacles in a very positive way that we all have aligned and agreed to on, that this is an obstacle that we want to remove. So anger is definitely one of those things, an afflictive emotion, and being on the bodhisattva path, that is absolutely going to continue to cause suffering until you learn other ways to deal with that, right? Just like any of those emotions. When you start to study the Dharma, or when you study the Dharma, you can't be angry. It's not possible. If you're mindful and you're alert and you're present with what you're studying, I guarantee you it's not possible to be angry. It will dissipate. Sometimes in seconds, sometimes in minutes. But if you're studying the Dharma, if you're doing mantra work, even as simple as Om Mani Padme Hum, right, just the Buddhist mantra, it will dissipate. It will alleviate. It will generate happiness, which is completely counterintuitive to anger and can manifest energy in a positive way that can also accomplish the things that we need to accomplish. This medicine Buddha tanka here that was given to the temple last weekend, the whole theme of the medicine Buddha, and what I learned last weekend, my medicine Buddha practice was always for other people. I have a lot of sick people in my life. well, physically sick people, mentally is a whole other story, but physically sick people, right? I have a lot of people that are physically sick, so my Medicine Buddha mantra work has always been for other people. In Kenshin Rinpoche, again, last weekend, at the beginning of the initiation, and even during his public talk, when we were talking about suffering, that work needs to be for ourselves first, and I did hear this from Noel, and I heard it from others. You've got to take care of yourself before you can take care of others, right? And I think a lot of people know that, but you have to hear that sometimes to make sure that you're thinking about that. Well, how am I taking care of myself? What are the things that I'm doing to take care of myself that I can take care of others? The Medicine Buddha practice allows you to do both. In our sadhana text that we have, we open up the Medicine Buddha with aspirations for others. We have a spot in there for aspirations for ourselves to really bring that practice together. Every single day, you know, my focus, and I think everybody that practices Buddhism, is to relieve suffering. And not just my suffering, not just the people that are close to me, but the world at large, right? I think that we really have a unique opportunity right here, right now, to really start to make fundamental changes to help make people happy and to help alleviate more suffering. Coming to the temple and being able to hear different Dharma talks and to be able to steep in Buddhism and to be able to steep into the practice really gives you that foundation, I think, that's critical for being able to go out and do your best work and to be your happiest self, right? Those are the reasons that we all have a spiritual practice primarily is to really want to enrich our lives and to enrich the lives of others. It's amazing every day, every week, every month, every year that goes on with studying, with spirituality, with the natural aging process, that there's always more to learn. You know, every time you read the prayer book, it doesn't matter if it's the first, the 10th, the 100th, the 1,000th time, every day it should be resonating differently with you, hopefully, right? And you're going to see something maybe that you haven't seen before, or that you're able to take a part of that text with you for the day and really put it into daily practice, really make it impactful on your life by putting the Dharma into practice, because that's certainly what we all come together for, is really more than anything is to be able to take what we're learning and to take happiness and joy and loving kindness and compassion and to be able to take it out into the world. And that's what we're all here to generate and to manifest. So I'm going to pause there. We're going to do a sit for a few minutes here, and then we can have a break, and then we'll come back for some questions and some comments this morning. Do we have a gong? That's here. There we go. Yeah. And there we go. It's okay. Okay, let's go ahead and take probably just a five-minute break, and then we'll come back and we can have some questions and some discussion, and then we'll do closing prayer. Cool. Whatever's on top of your mind, we are here for you, of course, and want to make sure that we're addressing everybody's needs. So please, Dirk's going to start. Cool.
Well, I just wanted to, I'm on my way here this morning, I thought every single possession is a burden. Mm. And then you said, you started talking about that. So it was just, that's all. That's all I have to say.
Awesome. Yeah, and that's, you know, that's every single possession is a burden. Yeah, right? They do cause a level of attachment. That's most importantly is there's an emotional component and then there's that physical object component of it, right? It's kind of like baggage. It's locked onto you whether you want it or not. And until you're able to liberate it or to get away and to go free, it's going to be there. Whether you file it in the back of your mind, it's still one of those things that's just going to nag and nag. Like that storage locker I was talking about. Oh my gosh, I couldn't even imagine having a storage locker. My rule is if I haven't looked at it, used it in 6 months, it is gone. Gone, gone, gone. And I, you know, my house is pretty, people who know, it's pretty simple, it's pretty clean, and I don't have clutter. I don't, because it causes distraction. In my mind, it causes distractions, right? It's a lot of distractions and can take away on what you're trying to focus. Now, my altar, of course, at home, I have a whole room for my practice, but that's a little different. And I have tankas and I have things on the altar, but that's because they're auspicious items. They have religious meaning, right? So there's a balance again between having possessions and not. But thank you, Dirk. I'm glad that helped. You're still attached. Oh yeah, I'm still attached. Oh yeah.
I've just heard the word auspicious a lot in like Buddhist texts and whatnot. I'm just curious like what it means to both.
Yeah, yeah. So we have auspicious and non-auspicious, right? It's kind of, it's and they're auspicious. We talk about it in several contexts. Primarily an auspicious attitude is one that's not holy, but of good thought, of pure thought, right? There's no negativity involved in auspicious behavior or auspicious thoughts. Now, from our practice perspective and from a Tibetan culture perspective, an auspicious day is the day that we do puja practices on. Maybe it's a fire puja or a medicine Buddha puja. And for example, me saying the mantra, which you were here, Tayata Om Bekense Maha Bekense Rande Samugate Soha, me saying that on a non-auspicious day versus an auspicious day, if I say it one time on a non-auspicious day, if I say it on an auspicious day, it's worth 1,000 times more. So there's some of that's Tibetan culture, like, and there's also, you can't cut your hair on certain days, right? You don't want to cut your hair on a non-auspicious day. And the calendar's marked. If you go Google a Tibetan calendar, you'll see each and every one of these days is marked out as being an auspicious day or non-auspicious day. So, you know, and a lot of people, they plan their lives around that. Like, they don't leave their house, right? Or there's certain numbers that are involved. If it's like a triple non-auspicious day, right, it's just like, don't get out of bed. So, yeah, that's what we mean by auspicious. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Greg.
Yes.
Yeah, I had also a thought on, I have a thought and a question, a comment and a question on attachment to objects. And it just, I flashed on a memory of my dad's here, but cleaning out his storage locker when he moved from San Francisco. I won't tell on you too much, Dad, I promise. And there was a, my stepmother has lived in San Francisco for a long, long time, and they had a big house, and her father was an international merchant, and they had all sorts of amazing things in that storage locker. And one of the things they had was a box of sterling silver plated flatware, and it was in this velvet box, and I opened it up, and it had this this plaque that said, I'm going to paraphrase this, I can't remember the exact quote, but it was some kind of sort of marketing propaganda, like, you know you have really arrived when you own a set of blankety-blank silver flatware. And it was, it had not seen the light of day in probably 30 years. This, and then, you know, we're liquidating the things and trying to get rid of them, and nobody wanted them. So we just dropped them off. And it was a flash of shunyata, kind of, like, wow, you know, this, at that time, it might have even been 50 years ago, this silver, it was antique, was this symbol of achievement, of attainment, of status that has no real bearing.
Happiness.
Yeah, if you have a dinner party and you're eating with this silverware, then it's a great dinner party and you'll have memories that will last forever. But so, yeah, that really, I don't know, that just one moment of seeing that really stuck with me. And then the question was, so I am only been really practicing very diligently for the last year, and before that kind of had my own dilettante dabble practice. I have definitely seen improvements with my ability to manage anger, but I still do get angry. Yeah. And so I'm wanting to have some recommendations on how to work with that with practices.
Yeah, that's a great question, and I could probably talk for an hour about that because I spend way too much time. You know, anger is an afflictive emotion, like I said earlier, and it's one of those afflictive emotions in that really comes back fundamentally to a self or an I. Right? And again, I don't want to, for people that are new, the selflessness and the emptiness concepts are things that they're not advanced. Nothing in Buddhism is advanced, but the things that it's not your first day you're going to talk about. But anger comes from I. It comes from self, right? Again, I might say so-and-so made me angry. Well, that's a bunch of BS. I made myself angry. Nobody can make me angry except myself. Now that's deep, right? It's true. Because that person that cut in front of me on the way over here this morning had to be the one person that was going to just, where's the test, right? That was my test this morning. How's Greg going to handle this on his way to temple this morning? Lamala's, they're in a bigger hurry than I am. They're going to the hospital to see a sick family member, right? Let them go. I hope they get to where they're going safely. That's one way I deal with anger. Road rage is a big one. I drive back and forth to the Bay Area a lot, and it's a 3-hour, 167-mile one-way trip, and at 4 in the morning or 4 in the afternoon, there's idiots on the road. But anyways, that's definitely one of the ways that I practice it, is I have to flip it around right away. It's like, wow, yeah, they cut in front of me. Well, why did I get angry? Well, did I have to hit my brakes? No, but they closed that space that Lamala tells me to always create, right? Create space, Greg. You can't get angry if you create space. If you're angry, go outside and look at the sky, right? Anger's like this. The best way to describe anger is like this. I've said this before, hold your hand in front of your face for 10 seconds. You're going to get angry. And if you don't believe it, go home and try it. You're going to get angry. You're going to just feel a fundamental shift inside. Why? Because anger is about not having space. It's usually, there's three things that cause anger. You're being hurt, you're fearful, or you're frustrated. As we unpeel that layer around anger, those are the three things that are happening within you, right? Because again, anger is happening within you. So I can say, okay, what is it that's causing that? And am I scared that I'm going to lose something? Am I scared that I'm going to get hurt here? Did they say they didn't like the way I spoke, right? Again, it's me. It's I. It's I. It's self. That anger is all about self. You can't be angry if you're thinking about others or if you're trying to be compassionate and to generate loving kindness. those are the things that I have to do within my practice on a regular basis. And creating space is probably one of the biggest things. Going outside and looking at the sky, or if you live in the city, going anywhere and being able to make sure that you can see as far as you can possibly see without having anything obstructing your physical view whatsoever. Whether it's through a window up at the sky, but looking as far away as you can, that's going to create space. I promise you, those feelings will begin to dissipate. There's something inherently fundamental with this practice. Again, you try it and it works. It's true, right? It's emotion and logic coming together, knowing that this is work. And I know it works because I've tried it, and I know it works because I have to do it, right? There's times where I have to go take a walk, or there's times in the car where I just have to kind of say, okay, I hope they get to where they're going safely. And does it mean that I don't get angry? No. It means that I'm not going to make myself sick over it, and that I'm not going to let it ruin my day, right? And that I just need to get over it, and that it's another opportunity, again, at the end of the day, for me to practice my practice. That's what it's here for. And if I didn't have this anger to work on, what would I have to work on? God forbid it, sickness or something else, right? We all have something, right? We all have something at a different time. We don't all have the same thing. Just like happiness, again, objects, things that make you happy. This is an iPad. This makes me happy. It might not make Noelle's dad happy. It makes my grandmother happy. My grandmother and my mom are here. iPads make them happy. But you know what? Just like any other object, we all experience that object differently. We all experience that object differently. And just because I say that this makes me happy, it's not going to make anybody else happy. It's just not. Because that happiness, again, comes from nowhere else except from within. Now, it's typically the experiences that I have with my iPad, my Dharma materials on here, my prayer materials on here, my leisure reading material, the world news. The Dalai Lama shows up here sometimes, you know? So I associate the experiences with this as making me happy. Other people might not. They might just be communicating with a long-lost relative overseas. So any item or any object, again, that we think is going to create any sense of inherent happiness is not, because that happiness, again, fundamentally has to come from within, too. Yeah. Yeah?
Hello?
Oh. Hey.
Hi. Hi. So I just, when you guys were talking about different things, I just, something came to mind that I read just today that, like, brings together the fact that things are a burden and the sense of self. So it's a Buddha quote from the Samyutta Nikaya, and I'm just going to read it and see if it makes sense. The five aggregates are truly burdens. The burden carrier is the person. Taking up the burden is suffering in the world. Laying the burden down is blissful. So the whole idea that, like, oh, all of our possessions are a burden. But the biggest burden is that sense of self. And when you put it down.
Yeah, and the five aggregates.
When you just put it down. That's enlightenment. That's what they call putting down the burden. Yeah. So, yeah, just that's a quote that I read just today. So.
Yeah, so again, in our prayer book this morning, what we talk about, the five aggregates are in here. Form, right? And again, when we talk about tying that together with kind of suffering, the five aggregates are the root of all suffering, right? Again, just like the four sufferings being age, the birth, aging, sickness, and death. Fundamentally, those are the four sufferings. The five aggregates are going to give you that every single time. Aging, birth, sickness, and death. That's what the five aggregates are there for. That's it. It's to cause suffering. Now, generating happiness is the absolute, that's the root of changing that experience, right? And finding a completely different way to use those five aggregates and those compositional factors and phenomena to have a different experience and to manifest happiness, for sure. For sure. Yeah. Hey.
Developing attachment.
So maybe this question would be better for the previous meeting. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe this question would be better for the previous meeting, but I wasn't able to make it. I'm coming here as an addict. And you're talking about objects. What brings me here is the clinging to impermanent states.
Sure.
So I like the Buddhist philosophies of life is suffering. Most addicts have gone through a lot of suffering. And one of the main causes of that suffering is our clinging to impermanent states, being high or childhood or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
And I really love that nirvana, as I understand it, is just the cessation of craving. That really speaks to an addict. I guess it's a question that's not necessarily appropriate to the whole group, but do you have texts that you would recommend coming from that point of view, working with addiction? The AA canon is very AA, you know?
Sure.
I was just looking for an outside viewpoint on those thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, so lots of things firing off here.
There's also a group that meets in the morning. You know about that?
Yes.
Okay.
I have a service position at another meeting at the same time.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to try and get out of it.
So there's lots of thank you, Susan. So Susan was just sharing that here at the temple we have a mindful recovery group that is a great place to tap into. We have a wonderful library that's got some Dharma texts to talk about that as well. But just to kind of I really appreciate you sharing with what you did, because craving, desires, that's attachment and that's suffering, right? And fundamentally, when I just talked about anger and as being hurt or being jealous, the root of our suffering at the end of the day is craving and desires, right? And our human body really sets us up with our brain to trick us when you're born here. And that just flew off the table by itself. That was pretty cool. The human body and the brain really don't set us up for success when we get here in these five aggregates. And the reason I say that is because the moment that umbilical cord is cut, your craving and desire begins. Why? Because your body needs nutrients. You need nourishment. We all have to eat. I hate eating, right? You have to eat. I hate it. Why? Because it's a craving. It's a desire that this form, one of my five aggregates, that this form says, I have to have this or else we can't do anything. But at the end of the day, that eating is no different than the craving for that next drink or for that next substance that you want to put into your body. They're all the same. You're having that level of craving is all the same. It's that temporal, that short-term, very short-term experience that other substances like food and alcohol and others can come into your system and trick you even more and say, if you keep giving me this to me, it's going to make you happy. When in fact, just like we said, usually it causes more suffering, right? Just like having more things causes more suffering too. So I hope that helps. Awesome, awesome, awesome.
I guess more of a comment than a question, cool. Just relating to what you were saying. I think that addiction, I would never wish it on anybody. I just think that it's kind of a double-edged sword, in a sense, with Buddhism. This is just my thought about it, is that one way that it can be a benefit is there's this concept of hitting bottom, and, you know, what's the first step? I'm powerless over the substance, and my life has become unmanageable. And I think that a lot of people who aren't in addiction, we kind of hit these bottoms, in a sense, in our lives, but we kind of bounce back in a way that we kind of forget about it. Like, life gets good again. And I think a lot of us come to Buddhism from this felt sense of suffering. But there's a lot of, you know, numbing agents out there in the world that can help us to forget that we're suffering and make it harder for us to have our motivation. So I think addiction can provide a really powerful motivation, because it's, you, you're dealing with it every day. Mm-hmm. So it could either kill you, or it can maybe become a real springboard to something. So I think it actually can juice the Buddhist path in a way.
Yeah.
So I'm going to be visiting a friend on Tuesday who's been dealing with trauma, and from a very serious experience of someone taking their power as a sexual trauma. And I just have a really hard time conceptualizing how to talk with her about this type of practice, where it's like this sense of like total taking away, like it was almost like her entire power was taken away.
Sure.
In this moment, you know? And so I just like ideas around how to talk about that.
Yeah, so yeah, I think you were here on Friday night when we did the Tonglen practice, right? So, So on Friday night we did a Tonglen practice, but one of the things that we talked about, and I think that I would probably use as a springboard to start having that conversation with her about, is that the only thing that we fundamentally have from a conscious perspective is this moment that we're all here, right now together, okay? When we leave, this becomes a memory. It's not happening right now. My dream last night is a memory. What's the difference between that memory that happened 30 seconds ago and that trauma that happened to her? The point is that that's happened, and she needs to be focused on this moment right here and making new moments that are going to really diminish that. And don't get me wrong, there's a tremendous amount of recovery and healing that she's going to have to go through, right? That's hard. Trauma is suffering at the root, and usually suffering that you didn't ask for, right? And that's even more difficult. But she can take that energy again and really flip it around and manifest it to focus on the power of now and to be present and to make sure that she begins the healing process right now. Because it really sounds to me, and I'm not judging or saying, it sounds like she's a little stuck, right? If she feels like she's lost that power, she hasn't. The Buddha has restored that power to her. She has just as much power as when it happened. She needs to tap into that power. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. We have one more announcement. We had a Sangha member. Go ahead.
We had a Sangha member pass on to her next adventure. On Thursday, Jan Peterson, and it was somewhat sudden. She was surrounded by family, and she was surrounded by several members of the Sangha here. Our resident monk, Geshe Damsho, was there. And it was a good passing. It was a good transition. And we would like to honor her next Friday at 6:30 here. And we would love for you to be here to pay homage to her and to do practice in dedication to her.
Okay, all right, and then I think the only other thing we have tomorrow night, Lama will be here at 7 o'clock. We are continuing the Lotus Sutra. I hope this is the last year. We only have, what, 2 more months, right? We've been on this for 2 years, and it's kind of my fault, so hopefully we're going to be moving on soon, but tomorrow at 7 as well.
I just had one more.
Yeah, yeah. Where is it at?
It's in the library area.
Okay.
And it's, the bulletin board is for our little Buddhas here and the little Buddhas in the back.
Nice, nice. Yeah, so the Little Buddhas program, and my sister actually texted me this morning. We have daycare, right? Every Sunday we have daycare, whether Lama's here or not. Taruko is in the back, and she heads our Little Buddhas program, and she's always looking for volunteers as well. There's a sign-up sheet on that bulletin board also, so any help is definitely appreciated there. And then we're going to be also starting in the community, and Noelle is spearheading as the moderator and facilitator, a community, not a sangha, but a community mother support group. So very exciting that within the next couple months that's going to happen. And she mentioned that a couple of the teenagers are going to be providing daycare so that the moms will be able to bring their kids into that event as well. So again, another very exciting event that we're going to be able to start hosting again soon. Yeah.
And I have one.
Full moon.
After Bangla teaches tomorrow night, we have our dinner service.
Tomorrow night? Oh. It's four times so it's the full moon practice. It's a quarter moon. No, it's a full moon. Yeah, it's a full moon. So four times a year we're doing it, or every four times a month. So Dirk. Very auspicious again.
Do an auspicious practice of Vajrasattva. Mantra and Siddhi practice. From 9 o'clock to 10 o'clock.
Right here. Right here. Yep, and Dirk will be leading that. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I asked Noelle if it was going to be a parent support group first, but I'm not a parent. I've only been a foster parent, but we don't want to segregate. That's not the goal here, is to segregate the moms from the dads, right? I think it was just that there's, if there's discussion that moms want to talk about the dads and not in front of the dads, that might be a good idea. And it doesn't mean that the dads group, that doesn't mean that the dads can't meet in the community or somewhere else at the same time that the moms are meeting, right? So we can have an event for the family, ultimately. We'll have to brainstorm and ideate around that. I think we've got something good churning here again.
Can we do a black sheep
fan? A black sheep fan. There we go. There we go. Yeah. Yeah. I'll probably be the first one there. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay. All right. I think that's it then for this morning. We'll go ahead and do some dedication prayers on page 15, and then we'll go ahead and wrap up for the day here. Of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into
that latent state. May the supreme jewel Bodhicitta that has not arisen arise and grow. May that which has arisen not diminish, but increase more and more. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All powerful Chenrezig Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. May the teachings of the Buddha flourish, and may the upholders of the teachings remain forever. May all migrators achieve happiness, and may they fulfill all their temporary and ultimate goals. Losan, magical display of the deep awareness of all the victorious ones, merciful giver of a stream of profound and vast instruction to the fortunate migrators, please remain always unperishing, unchanging, unfading. Avalokiteshvara, great treasure of objectless compassion, Manjushri, master of flawless wisdom, Vajrapani, destroyer of the entire hosts of Maras, Tsongkhapa, crown jewel of the snowy land sages, Losandrapa, I make requests at your holy feet.
Thank you. Thank you again, everybody. Please enjoy the rest of your day. We hope to see everybody again soon. Thank you. Oh, and there's coffee and tea in the back, in the community room. Yeah, if you haven't been back there, please.